Welcome to Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. We will be talking with business thought leaders, entrepreneurs, CEOs, and business team coaches who have all taken the journey to grow up their businesses to their tip top. We'll be sharing strategies, systems, and stories on how you can grow up your company at the speed you want. If you are searching for your path to the tip top and feel your time is running out, then this podcast is for you. I'm your host, Shannon Susco. Well, welcome everyone. We're back at Tip Top, growing up your business with Metronomics. Today I'm here with Matt Dion, and Matt's got a great story, great experience, and I'm looking forward to speaking with you, Matt. Welcome.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. This is going to be fun.
It's always fun with you. So Matt currently is the CEO of Mintent Digital Agency. But Matt's like, this isn't your first time gig as a CEO. Matt's got lots of experience in different roles growing up companies. And so Matt, welcome. And I really would love just give our listeners a little bit of background, a little bit of where you've got experience in different companies along the way.
Yeah, sure. Okay. I'm a Vancouver local. I was born and grew up in Vancouver, and I went to a university, Simon Fraser University. And I got introduced into, I guess, my career through the co-op program up there. So one of my first jobs was working for Microsoft, right? And this was in the early 90s. And it was...
That was the place to be.
Oh, well, yeah. I mean, I'm a kid out of Maple Ridge, right? And I come I'm in Microsoft, and these guys are all driving nice cars. I'm like, what's this all about? Yeah. So I learned about software, and I was into computers. Like as a kid, I had the, you know, showing my age here, but I had the VIC-20 and the Commodore 64. Yeah. So I was sort of a bit sort of nerdy in that way, but not nerdy enough to be a programmer, because I tried that at university and they're like, yeah, this isn't for you. I can't focus that much one thing, right? So I got into Microsoft, and it was the business side, right? Vancouver had a little Microsoft office, and they were just doing sales and marketing. And I was like, really cool. So that launched me into my career, which was basically in technology on the business side. So, so I was at Microsoft for a short time. And then I was very fortunate to meet the guys that started Crystal Decisions.
Oh, yes.
Just a startup. And they're just such great guys.
What a story.
Oh, such great story. So I was so grateful. That was really my training ground in my career. I was there for 10 years from 94 to 2004. And it was this huge ride from a startup to a mid-size to growth to big acquisition by big companies and all that. So my time there, though, the job evolved. So I started running PR and analysts, and then ran marketing, ran sales for a while, did product management. So kind of, I would say everything on the go-to-market side of a technology company. So obviously, you know, that gave me a really good background. I had exposure to amazing leadership. You know, all the things that we're reading about today about great, you know, level five leaders was there in those days before it was a thing. And it just got sort of ingrained in me. I didn't even know how lucky I was to have that. I came out of there and I just spent time in the Vancouver startup scene, just working for a few different startups. And then I was offered a CEO role. I took that. Then I went back into becoming a head of marketing for an e-commerce company. And that was cool. I was there for about 7 years. So I learned all about e-commerce. And
That was a pretty big one too. That was huge growth. That was ElasticPath?
ElasticPath, yeah.
Yeah, so that's a great story.
One of the great stories of Vancouver, and still is. Then I tried my hand at sort of being a one person marketing consultant. I went to, you know, this was pre-COVID. I wasn't used to working from home. I didn't know what to do. I showed up at home. I was going down to Staples to get, I had to shave. I was in my sweatpants, and it was just, it didn't work for me. So then I had the opportunity to come into Mintent, which was a software company that sort of morphed into now a digital agency. So that's sort of my story, right? That's my background.
Well, it's great because you've had the experience both as an executive, a leader of a team, as well as leading the team. And I love that you have the experience of being on your own as well. Yeah. Like those are really good. And now you're a CEO again. And I say again, because your journey's sort of gone like that. And you know, mine as well. CEO, build it up, sold it, become an executive. You learn so much more actually as an executive and how to communicate.
All of the experiences roll. Like people say, oh, there's no such thing as failure. It's just learnings. But it, you know, it's actually true because, you know, you get to your next thing and you're like, I'm not doing that again. So without those learnings or those failures, you wouldn't make the right mistake next time, right? So everything just rolls in to accumulate to where you're at today. So it's been
great. If I think about CEO role and I think about my own experience, CEO role and a leader on the leadership team, what was your biggest learning? And I'm sure you have lots, but what stands out that you could give some feedback on around the thing when you're a leader in contrast to the CEO? Is there any difference?
Actually, the book that you recommend, The Motive, right, is a great, great lesson in that. So when I went from CEO, when I first was offered a CEO role, I did it for all the wrong reasons, right? Oh, my ego. Oh, yeah, I can CEO. Great. I'm going to run the show. And then after doing it for a few years, I'm like, wow, this is terrible. Right. It's just, you know, it has its rewards, but it's hard, right? It's just so hard and challenging. So you have to be there for the right reasons to motivate you to get through all the hard.
Yeah.
My first one actually was a turnaround. I don't know why I took this turnaround role again for probably ego reasons. And then I got in there. Wow, it's a lot of work. And so I finally kind of, I think, was doing it for the right reasons.
Yeah.
Raised somebody, bought a company. Right. And then the credit crisis of 2008 happened and we were a public company. So it just sort of, all the money disappeared.
Right.
So I had to wind it down and we converted it to a shell and sold it and stuff. So it was a humbling experience for sure. That's when I joined ElasticPath. And it was interesting because I was just like, it was so nice not to be the CEO, but to still be part of a leadership team that was doing strategy and making the decisions, but I wasn't on the hook for payroll and raising capital and all that stuff. And so it was almost like it was enjoyable, right? I could do what I did best without sort of losing sleep every night kind of thing. And I could empathize with the CEO. When people shit on the CEO for why is he why he's doing that? I'm like, look, until you've been in that seat, just keep it to yourself. It's a harder job than you think, right?
Yeah.
Everybody thinks, you're the boss. You can do whatever you want. Why don't you do this? Why don't you get rid of those people?
Yeah.
It's not that easy, right? So I guess the perspective of it allowed me to be, hopefully a good exec team participant without being the CEO. So it was.
Yeah, I love that because I had the opposite experience than you, right? So I was a CEO first, then an executive leader, which was a shift. And then back to a CEO, back to executive leader. But I love how you described it in relativity to the motive, Pat Lencioni's book, reward-based leadership and responsibility-based leadership.
Yeah.
I just think that a lot of people forget that when you're the CEO, and I love that you said roll into the next role, and you're like, oh yeah, lots of empathy, lots of respect.
Yeah.
Because you understand that. I would say I had the same for the CEOs as the companies got bought going in because we'd been there, done that, and almost like taking a bit of a breather from it, right? To support them, but taking a breather.
I think when you're going into your second one or third one, I just watched that movie about the rescued those kids in Thailand that were trapped in the cave.
Oh, yeah.
Divers from the UK, they saw it on the TV and they're like, they knew they were the right ones for that job, but they obviously weren't excited about, oh, yay, we get to dive 5 miles in the ground in the cave.
It was responsibility.
It was like, this is dangerous and it's going to really be hard and terrible, but the only ones in the world that could save these kids. Now, it's not that extreme. You should be like taking your second and third one going, I'm a bit scared. Because I know what's in front of me. Yes. This isn't like, I'm going to get a new office, a title, and bow down to me. You shouldn't be thinking that.
I think those experiences shape the next role, the next role.
Yeah.
If I shift gears a little bit, as we've known one another for quite some time, I'd say a couple of decades.
Back in 2006, 2007, we were on the Ace Tech board together.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So a couple decades. Let's just it's been a while.
Yeah, exactly. We'll just a couple decades. Oh man.
It's been a while. But we ran into one another again, as we would definitely at the annual ACE Tech conference in Whistler every April. If anyone's listening in, that conference happened for the last 30 years, April, Whistler, British Columbia, come and ski. You're a CEO and leadership team. Check it out. It's fabulous. Yeah. We've grown up at ACE Tech. Let's say that as leaders and CEOs.
Yeah.
But we met, I think I had just, released Three Hag Way, or I actually launched it at ACE Tech. We ran into one another. I think I launched it there because I figured like that's my sort of village of CEOs. Yeah. And we spoke afterwards about it. And I think, and I might not have your words exactly right, but it was sort of like the next day. And you just sort of said, I got to do this.
Yeah.
I've tried this on my own.
Yeah.
I've got to do this. What that meant for people listening in is that I lead a round table there that has 10 CEOs that follow the Metronomics methodology. And it wasn't even called Metronomics at that point. It was like, I got to do what this Three Hag thing. What was, you get to, and every leader gets to a point, and CEOs get to a point, and they're like, I think I'm just going to try that next thing. And we get CEOs thrown under the bus as like the flavor of the month, right? Yeah, the flavor of the month. Where were you at that time? Tell us a little bit about where you were in Mint 10, as well as the journey for you as a CEO.
Right. Okay. So I'll tie those things together. I mean, they're all related. So before you wrote the books, ACE Tech was pushing Varnish and the Rockefeller habits and all that. So we read the book.
Yeah.
And as my first company, I was using it. And honestly, it's funny, like sometimes you just got to make a tweak to something that's already there to make it more useful. Right. And so for me, there were two things that always drove me crazy. And one was that the one page plan was a static, almost unusable PDF. There was that gap between the sort of 1 year and the long term. Right.
Yeah.
That was like, well, this is almost tomorrow. This is almost going to happen really quick.
Yeah.
This is like so far out, no one paying attention. So really the Three Hag, as soon as I heard that, I'm like, what is that? And then you 3 year and it ties those pieces together. I was like, okay, great. Oh yeah. Now it's in software. So I can actually change.
Yeah.
Oh my God.
Yeah.
So like it was sort of tweaks to something that was pretty good that made it awesome. Right. And then I had used it as a CEO. I tried to bring it into when I was just an executive, but it didn't go. The rest of the exec team didn't want to use it. So I used it within my team and they loved it. And they're now off doing their own as the community using it.
Yeah.
To really help them. And so when I became a CEO again, I'm like, I'm just going all in on this. Like I'm joining your round table. I'm reading the books.
Yes.
And I'm going to get the software. And it was just like getting a trainer at the gym, right? Like we always, you talk
about
having someone there and a community of people that are all using it that push you to use it. So it instills the discipline, right?
Right.
And so just, I knew it was the right thing to do. And then so becoming immersed in the round table and everything.
Yes.
And getting a coach and all that. I knew that that would just, it's like, okay, I got to go to the gym. I'm never going to go on my own. I'll
train. Okay. I love that analogy. I've never heard anyone say that analogy about like a round table. The round table that we've been involved in, Bulldogs, has evolved. You know, it started like as an ACE Tech round table. They have round tables, CEO only.
Yeah.
And ours grew into a CEO plus leadership team round table, which I think was the progression that's needed because it gets us out of this flavor of the month. Like I learned
what's
something new at the gym.
Right? Your team's looking at you. Oh no.
Yeah. But I've never heard it. Like, I love that. It was like a gym group. You once a month because like everyone else is going to show up and you got to have your stuff ready because everyone else is going to have their stuff ready.
Yeah. You're going to look like an idiot if you're standing in front of the room and like your one page plan is a year old. You look like you sleep in when your gym partner is outside honking the horn. You're like, you feel like an idiot. So you don't do it.
And then the other thing that I loved as we evolved that round table was we tried one off CEO plus leadership teams, like workshops. That was in the early days.
Yeah.
And then we got to doing it. I think when you joined, we adjusted to every month. So every month, CEO plus leadership team showed up. In the beginning, it was pre-pandemic, on like in person in Vancouver, everyone together. And that was like a really big gym day with all the teams there. And then in the afternoon, we had the captains. But you said a few key things, right, around the system itself. I think it's not like you were a first-time CEO when you like went all in. That's what's really cool. You had other experiences, and we know lots of leaders have other experiences. This grew up out of many experiences with Rockefeller Habits and EOS, you know, and Great Game, and all of these execution systems plug in. What difference did it make for you as a CEO with your team? What difference did it make? Like, so you come in as a CEO, you go, I'm going in. You mentioned in another team, you only did it with your team because the rest of the leadership team didn't want to do it. Talk a little bit about that.
So honestly, the reason to put it in is a bit self in your own self-interest, right? Like, I don't want to say selfish, but it is in a way because it makes your life easier. So I'll give you an example that will, like a story that will clarify this. So we were using it internally in the marketing team.
Yeah.
And then someone that worked for me went off and became a head of marketing at another technology company. Was just really the void of not having it became obvious because she was I was mentoring her a little bit and she was saying, I just, you know, trying to set the marketing goals and like, how do we align it to like what the company goes? I'm like, well, do they have, I was asking, have a BHAG or a 3HAG or a 5HAG, or do they have rocks? Do they have none of that? It was just a kind of a company that didn't grow up organically. It just kind of had their own stuff. And she was just really struggling. Like, how do you be strategic when you can't align to anything that's strategic, right? So so going from having it, and she sort of grew up that way with it, and then went to an environment where it was missing, and you could just see how difficult it was. And I said, well, try and pull these things out of the exec team, even if you don't get them on the whole methodology. And so it just adds that clarity. It adds that, why are we doing this? What do we need to do? When do we need to do it? Who's doing what? It's the rule book, right? The playbook. So without it, you're random. Like, we at Midtown, we're marketing with intent. We're trying to be intentional and get away from the maximum marketing. So you can't get away from random if you don't have an alternative, which is not random.
No, totally. But what you said around the example you just used, it seems when you use a system like Metronomics, and you use it for a while and everyone's in and like it's beating, we have clarity of where we're going. We can see beyond the year. We can see out 3 years. We know where we're going to be in 10 years, that kind of view. Yeah. It seems obvious. It wasn't obvious back in the day, like when we were like pulling all the pieces together. And the missing thing was a 3HAG. And we see this a lot. What's the thing that has to happen? And the leader you were mentoring that was on your team and then went and got a leadership role. Mm-hmm. And thinking about Mintent, you didn't have that issue with Mintent. Are we going to do this or not? You're like, we're doing this. Everyone on the bus, or if you're not doing it, like, the door on the bus is over there. What is it? Why do people not want to do this?
I think it's because they think it's going to create more work, and it doesn't. It takes away work. I think there's a lot of reasons. It's change. It's new. It's what's this thing? Is it flavor of the day? Oh, I've already read Good to Great. I know how to do. Jim Collins taught me how to do all that. Like, it's, why don't people eat right? Why don't they go to the gym? Because although it's like everyone knows what to do,
they don't have
the discipline. So then you got to go. So it's not so much about learning how to eat right and learning what weights. Yeah. It's like, how can I sort of organize my life in a way that just becomes part of how I live? And I think it's the same in a business. It's like, well, what do we got to do for this to become part of our business? And so it's not just reading.
That's a great way to put that.
You have to join the gym and get a trainer, right? So it's like, get to the round table.
Even when you do that, you don't always get it. You always don't get the habits. You can join a gym and get a trainer and still not show up.
Well, you know what? I think people that do stick with it, see some kind of gains, right?
Yes.
Pretty quickly. So that's, yeah. I love how you sort of say, gut things out and get things going.
Yes. Because
if you had to do the whole system all at once, people would just, they would be doing a lot of work for very little return. And they'd be like, this isn't for us. So I think it's like, you know, gut some things out, start, and it's like, oh, okay. You know, I think you gotta get to the value points or the light bulb moments pretty quickly in the process. Right. And that's, yeah. Then that gets people over, and involving the whole team too, because if the CEO, you know, CEOs are always going to conferences, coming back and just, the latest stuff, and people just shut that off. So that it's like, this is different. Like now we're going to the gym for real, right?
We're going to the gym for real. A coach is showing up and look at all these other,
you're in the gym with me, right?
And look at all these other teams that are doing it too, right? So I thought that was pretty powerful, but I do know that there are many teams who may learn of Metronomics, learn of another system, know it's there, but don't necessarily want to do it or go there. Yeah. Not yet. Yeah. Right. And there's usually a time that it's like, yes, this is the time we're doing it. And I think you said it really nicely. It gets to the point as a CEO, when a CEO makes the decision, and this is my experience, and this is the experience with leaders and CEOs that I work with, is there's some pain, right? They've said they're going to do something and they're not getting it done.
Yeah.
And so what's the next step? What's the next step? But it's not a flick the switch. That's the other thing. Oh. Like I always look for the silver bullet.
Yeah.
Right. As we do with diets and gym, and can I go to the gym and come out like with a six pack today?
Well, I think a lot of that, you're right. It's the pain. I think people that make major life changes, whether it's like diet change or a workout, or if they've had some kind of bad habit or addiction and they finally just have to sort their shit out, right? They've usually had to hit a point where like they've suffered enough that they're like, I need a different way. And so maybe your businesses, you see that pattern where like if a business starts off and they're 8 out of 10s and they're going along, maybe they just never, because, you know, to bring something in, the pain of switching has to be compensated by the greater than the pain of staying where you're at. Right.
Yeah.
And so maybe businesses, the CEO just has to have a breaking point where they're like, I just can't do it.
And that's what I see. That's what I see a lot. I know I had that breaking point. I was just so desperate. That sounds terrible, but I was so desperate to get to the other side of what I said we would do and what our team committed to. And the team wanted it too. They wanted to win as well.
Yeah.
But the thing that I think is a bit of a fallacy, and you said it quite nicely, is that it's a little bit each day, right? And it's not like individual habits. We do same thing, discipline a little bit each day to create a habit. With a team, we have to get everybody to agree to do the next step together and the next step. And so I look at it as team habit stacking, and the team doesn't want to do it. So if you're an executive and you bring this back to your team, you're like, hey, let's do it. Like, unless the CEO buys in, it's unlikely that will work.
No.
But you can do it with your team.
Yeah, well, I think it's so. But again, back to the motive, right? Like, it's the CEO's job is to get people to do things that they need to do. They might not realize they need to. Right? And that's hard, because you get a person that just doesn't want to do it. Your job is to somehow get them to do it, right? And you can't just be like, you have to do it because I'm the boss, right? It's like you really have to get people to buy into it for the right reasons. And that's hard. It's hard to, so that's the essence of the CEO role, right?
Yeah. Yeah. To bring this around, I'm going to do a little speed round of questions, and you're going to go, that's not a speed round, but just, you know, play along and answer it like, you know, from your gut kind of thing.
Okay. Okay.
Hey, what's one thing, your business venture, that you didn't expect to happen? What's one thing?
Oh, in intent?
Yeah.
COVID.
Yeah, see, that's easy. What's the biggest challenging you're facing in your CEO role today at Mintent?
Biggest challenge, I would say it's the labor market, finding A players. It's because there's a shortage, right? There's more jobs than there are people. So it's a natural kind of situation that's created for every business. But yeah, we're seeing that. Yeah.
What's your favorite sort of productivity hack or technology that you like to use in your business? What's the favorite thing to keep yourself efficient, effective?
Honestly, checklists. I have this little app that's a to-do list that
What's the name of it? Do you know?
Tools that everyone, it's called AnyList.
AnyList. Okay,
the reason I chose it for two reasons. It syncs between my phone and my computer. And one of my pet peeves is when you go to find a recipe online.
Yep.
And you got to hear the whole person's life story and read about their kids and their family dinners before you get to the recipe. So this actually, it's weird. This checklist thing has a recipe import. So you just import it and it just strips everything out except the ingredients and the steps.
Oh, I love that.
I know it's kind of random, but I was just using this. I downloaded it on my phone. I started using it. What's this recipe thing? So those two reasons, but without checklist. Yeah, no, I'm
okay. I love that. Yeah. I love that. And what was the name of it again, just so people can check it out?
It is
any checklist?
AnyList.
AnyList. Yeah. Okay. AnyList. I've learned a lot about new things. What's the book you're currently reading?
I just finished, so I'm in transition, but I just finished Steve Poltz, who was the former governor of the Bank of Canada, The Next Age of Uncertainty. So it talks about all these tectonic forces like population aging and technology progress and rising inequality and the growing debt and climate change, how that all swirls together to create this super uncertain world. Like, I think the world we've grown up into now is going to be super different than the next sort of chunk because of all these factors, right? So just how you, the only thing we know, what his theory is, the only thing we know is that it's just going to be very volatile and uncertain. So how do you, as a business leader or even household owner, deal with that?
Plan for that.
That was a fantastic book. I don't know. I just find myself drawn to the economics in these uncertain times. Like, I want to get away from
it. Yeah, something we haven't lived as leaders, business leaders.
You can't rely on news, right? Because that's all distorted views of economics. It's like, So I'm listening to the chief economists from the Royal Bank and CIBC and this governor of the Bank of Canada reading books because I want to know. I have to kind of school myself in the underpinnings.
Yeah, I find myself doing the same because we haven't lived through that.
Well, why is inflation what's at? Why are interest rates where they're at? I mean, really affect.
How does that play? Yes.
Why are they? And I've never, as a CEO, is like, bah. That's in the business section of the paper. I can look at it once in a while. But now it's like, no, this is real.
Yeah, that's the environment we're playing in today. Yeah. And I find myself doing that as well. And going back and rereading some books that are absolutely like of history to understand why we're here. Mm-hmm. And then what's it going to be like to get out of where we are?
History is great because I think we're going to hit some things in the future that we haven't seen in our lifetime. So in order to really figure out what might happen, you have to go back further than our lifetimes, and that's you're back into history and stuff. So
And I feel as a CEO and as a coach of many high growth businesses, I need to have that view again. As a CEO, you're over here, but now I've been bringing that view to the CEOs I'm working with, going, we need to have, like, we need to look at the whole environment. Yeah. And maybe we took for granted this part. We can't take it for granted anymore.
Well, no, I mean, like, so up till now, you were like, well, you know, raising capitals in a world where there's lots of free money available and people just, funds can't give it away, right? And money costs you nothing. And you can kind of guarantee that there's certain assets and maybe your house, maybe your stock that's just going to keep going up. And if you need more, you just borrow free money. And I don't know that that's the world anymore, right? And so it's like, well, financing's tighter, money costs more, stocks might be volatile, there might not be as much VC money out there, angel money. That's a different world, right? Than we've
grown. Total different world.
You gotta deal with all of that, right?
So with all of that that's going on and thinking externally, right, all this is going on, what piece of advice would you give someone, maybe not an early stage CEO, but stepping in and taking the responsibility of a CEO role? What piece of advice would you give them?
Other than don't do it? So I would say it's funny because I do, what I've learned is like a lot of struggling companies will sort of, one of their last ditch efforts is like marketing, right? Everyone's buying our product. We have no sales. We need better marketing. And it's like, yeah. Mediocre marketing would be fine in a great company, but mediocre company, you can't save that with the best marketing on the planet, right? And so
yeah,
I've had people get quite angry at me. I'm like, look, let's first figure out, does the world need what you are offering? And they're like, of
yes,
course it does, right? Because they're so connected to it. I'm like, it might not. The world might not need another CRM or another sort of real estate office management, you know, whatever. Like, I don't know. There's lots of them.
Yes.
And I don't know if we need more of those. They get really quite offended. So I would say that it's again, the motive, right? It's like, okay, so if you're going into this for the right reasons, if you're going into because you want reward, it's almost like, who cares, right? Like a lot of CEOs make most of their money when they get fired and get their golden parachutes.
That
whole bad system that needs to change.
Yes.
But so it's like, if you're going into it like that, it doesn't matter. But if you're going into it because you really have a purpose and you want to make a difference, then understand the fundamentals of the business, right? Like all the stuff.
Yes. Metrics.
Who's your core customer? What's the attribute map of the market? Is there room for your stuff?
Yes.
What's the one problem that you solve? And then get into your positioning around that unique value proposition and all that. That's just the basic sort of core building blocks of the strategy that have to be there. If you wouldn't invest in your own money in that, then why would you invest your time? So I guess I would say is like,
love it.
Decide if you should do it for the right reasons, right? That would be my advice. Because then if that all aligns, then you'll, because you know how hard it is being the CEO, ups and downs.
Yes.
That guiding light, if you're really convinced it'll happen, that'll get you through the troughs, right?
Yeah, no, absolutely. And we've spoke about Pat Lencioni's 13th book, if you can believe it. We've been reading his books since early 2000s.
Yeah.
The Motive has such a simple message, but it's a great message for anyone looking to take on any leadership role.
Yeah.
And it's all about the why. Why would you do it? You know, why do you want to do it? I love that you said like, what would I don't do it? But you got to really want to do it. And there's got to be a strong why, and you got to be passionate about it.
Yeah. I think the appeal of the role, if you haven't been a CEO for the first time CEO, you almost just need to do it for whatever reasons are motivating you and then figure out. Because the draw of trying that role, and I want to cut my teeth at this, been a successful exec my whole career. And I think it's my turn and my chance, and I want to see if I can do it and whatever. You know, hey, why not? Go for it, and you're going to learn. Right.
You're going to learn. You're going to make mistakes, and you're going to learn some more.
I think read the Motive, but I think the Motive really makes a lot, really resonates with people who've been in the role and they're a second time, a third time. They might be going, why am I doing this again?
And it's a good book to read if you're going second or third time, for sure. What's the best piece of feedback, advice that you've received from coaches, mentors, people along the way? What's the best piece of advice that you can provide to listeners that you've received?
Yeah, you know, honestly, it's kind of along the lines of someone worded it perfectly to me to one time, but it's basically that the truth is not fully contained within your head, right? Like, it's like, you really believe something, you really believe you're right. Like, I'm on the right side of this thing. It's just, this is facts. This is right, black and white. Very rarely is that the case, right? So what you actually believe as your truth, your reality, is that it's just your perspective, right?
Yeah.
So you got to always be open to the fact that you could be wrong. You could be partially right. You could be fully right, but you don't know. So just be open to the...
Love it.
Of it.
Love it.
And that's always kept me... Because, you know, you could get pretty headstrong in this role and just like, we're doing it and push it through. And so being open to the fact that, you know, I might not have all the answers. I might be wrong. Someone else may actually have a better idea than me.
Yes.
But again, that's a discipline, staying in that mindset, right? Because it's not that other party you wants to do, right? Which is just drive.
Yeah, I love that. I think that's a great, great piece of advice, because the other thing that maybe rightly or wrongly that we're taught as leaders is that we have to have all the answers. Sure. And actually, we have to have all the questions, not the answers, 100%. Right? Yeah, we have to have all the questions.
Yeah.
Well, Amazing. Thank you for being here today. Thanks for your time. Loved our discussion. I know we can talk forever, which is really great. Geeking out on, you know, the things that we love about business. And I want to thank the listeners. Thank you for being here. Tip Top is all about reaching your tip top and growing up with Metronomics. Thanks again. We'll see you next time.
All right. Thank you.
Tip Top is brought to you by Metronomics. To find out more about Metronomics and how this 20-plus-year-old proven system will save you time and money as you grow up your business, visit metronomics.com. That's metronomics.com. Also, search for Metronomics in Apple Podcasts, Spotify, and Google Podcasts, or anywhere else podcasts are found.